hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear parts of a speech given by investigative journalist Wayne Madsen at the 9/11 conference in Washington, D.C. this past September 2013. His talk focused on three people who had information about 9/11 and who have all died. Two of these allegedly committed suicide. Today I'm going to share his talk about these two. To listen to his speech and hear about the third person who died and who was a CIA insider, you can go to the conference website, which is dc911conference.org. The two unfortunate people that you'll hear about today are Deborah Jean Palfrey, also known as the DC Madam, and Philip Marshall, author of the book on 9/11 called The Big Bamboozle. So let's start with Deborah Jean Palfrey. Deborah Jean Palfrey, or the D.C. Madam, many of you may remember her, ran a high-class escort service in the D.C. area catering to Washington insiders during the 90s and until approximately 2004-2005. According to the North Star report, among her reported clients were Senator John McCain, Senator Vitter, former AIDS czar Randall Tobias — the scandal led to his resignation from his State Department position — Dick Morris, military strategist Harland Ullman, creator of the concept of shock and awe, and former Vice President Dick Cheney. And according to an article on the website prisonplanet.com called 9/11 Conspiracy Connection to DC Madam Murder, quote, host Alex Jones recalled that during interviews, Palfrey had told him that her escort service was in fact being used as an intelligence operation to gather intelligence on individuals who used the service, particularly those connected to the military. Madsen, who spoke personally to Palfrey on numerous occasions, recalls one conversation at dinner with Palfrey where Palfrey told him, I have information that would have been of great interest to the 9/11 Commission. There's information that they have, the call girls, that would have been very important for the 9/11 Commission to know, having to do with intelligence they picked up about 9/11 before it happened. Wayne Madsen noted that some of Palfrey's call girls were being chauffeured by Shirlington limousines to poker parties attended by former CIA director and co-chair of the Joint 9/11 Intelligence Inquiry, Porter Goss. One of the reasons cited for Goss's abrupt resignation in May 2006 was his alleged involvement in a prostitution scandal where lobbyists were holding parties for GOP lawmakers that featured hookers and gambling at the Watergate Hotel in D.C. On the morning of 9/11, Goss was having breakfast with the head of Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence, General Mahmoud Ahmad, the man who ordered a wire transfer of $100,000 to alleged lead hijacker Mohammed Atta. In addition, Madsen pointed out that Jack Abramoff, who was also connected to the D.C. Madam scandal, allowed at least two of the 9/11 hijackers to use one of his casino boats in the days before 9/11, and that this is what Palfrey was probably referring to when she spoke about her call girls picking up information about 9/11 before it happened. Palfrey was found guilty of racketeering and money laundering in 2008 and was scheduled to be sentenced in late July of 2008. She had gone on the Alex Jones show and had stated that she was not suicidal and that if something happened to her, it was murder and not suicide. On May 1st, 2008, she was reported to have committed suicide by hanging herself in a shed in the back of her mother's home. One of her escort service employees was former University of Maryland professor Brandy Britton, who was arrested on prostitution charges in 2006. She was found hanged after allegedly committing suicide in January of 2007, days before she was set to go to trial. So that's just a little background on Deborah Jean Palfrey. And now let's listen to Wayne Madsen's speech. He's introduced here by Lou Wolf of the DC 9/11 Truth Group And Lou gives such a thorough introduction that we'll just begin with that.
Wayne has been a regular contributor on Russia Today until recently, as he just mentioned to me, under the sponsorship of George Soros. Tom Hartman came on board at RT, and Wayne was ushered out of the building. He also has been on Press TV and has been a frequent political and national security commentator on Fox News, no less, and also has appeared on ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, and CNN, BBC, Al Jazeera, and MSNBC. Wayne has taken on Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity on their television shows. He has been invited to testify as a witness before the House of Representatives, to the UN Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and a terrorism investigation panel of the French government. Wayne has some 20 years' experience on security issues. As a U.S. naval officer, he managed one of the first computer security programs for the U.S. Navy. He subsequently worked for the National Security Agency, the Naval Data Automation Command, the Department of State, RCA Corporation, and Computer Sciences Corporation, at which point he left and became one of our best-known whistleblowers and investigative journalist. And he was a senior fellow at the Electronic Privacy Information Center, known as EPIC, which is a privacy public advocacy organization. He's a member of the Society of Professional Journalists and the National Press Club. Wayne Mattson.
Well, thank you for that kind and probably too long introduction. But I want to thank the organizers of this conference, Matt Sullivan and all the other people who worked in putting this together. Well, I'm going to talk about three people today that are no longer with us. Now, you would wonder, especially the first, this is Deborah Jean Palfrey, who was also known in the press here as the D.C. Madam. She didn't like that. She preferred to be called the Washington Madam. I don't know. I mean, I think my issue would be being called a madam, but she didn't like D.C. Madam. She preferred Washington. She would be probably the most unlikely person you could think of as having information about what happened on 9/11. But remember, her business is the world's oldest profession, and espionage is the world's second oldest profession. And there is quite an intersection between the two, especially in this town. I didn't know Palfrey. I want to make this perfectly clear. Before she was in the news, I did not know this woman. But after she was in the news, I got an email, and I looked at the name, and I said, this can't be real. This got to be somebody pulling my leg, from Palfrey. And she said, I really would like to talk to you. And when I met her, she told me some very intriguing things about her plight. She was charged originally for violations of the Internal Revenue Code law, and also for mail fraud. So she had the IRS in Baltimore after she had the Postal Inspection Service here in Washington and out where she lived in Vallejo, California, so she had the local office there after her. But she was charged. Interestingly enough, it was the IRS office in Baltimore that filed the criminal complaint and the Postal Inspection Service here in Washington, but the U.S. attorney in Baltimore did not get the indictment on this woman. It was the U.S. Attorney's office here in the District of Columbia. And that is because the U.S. Attorney in Baltimore thought of Jean Palfrey as an excellent source of information to go after some of her clients. And they included Jack Abramoff and people associated with Abramoff and Shirlington Limousine, which would ferry some of her escorts around this area all the way up to New York. It involved Ed Norris, the former police commissioner of Baltimore, who had been with the NYPD prior to that, and also Bob Ehrlich named him the head of the Maryland State Police. So the U.S. attorney in Baltimore, who was a Republican after all, he was a George Bush appointee, Tom DiBongio, was not so much interested in Palfrey as much as he was the circle around this woman, and she was perfectly willing to cooperate with the U.S. attorney's office in Baltimore. And that is where her problems started. She ran an escort service called Pamela Martin and Associates. Jean Palfrey, when they came into her home in Vallejo, the IRS and the postal inspectors, and seized her records, the one thing they left in a box was all of her phone records. They never seized her phone records for some odd reason. These were AT&T records going back to the mid-90s and going up to about when she ended her business, 2004 time frame, 2004, 2005. She said, look, I want you to be the first journalist to get these phone records. So she handed me a CD, and I immediately could not wait to get to a computer to read these. But she soon had given that CD to some other people who had more resources at their service. So all I had was a list of phone numbers. No names, just the phone numbers like you get on your phone bill. So I went to the D.C. library up in Arlington and went out in Fairfax and looked at these Haynes crisscross directories that marketers used to use. If you had the number, you could get the name and the address. Meanwhile, people with more resources who had access to this, including ABC News, I would add, were able to really quickly, by using these services that are quite expensive, were able to get some major names. They got, for example, David Vitter, the senator from Louisiana. I was, meanwhile, going through this arcane method, and the only person of interest I kind of focused in on was somebody who was pretty high up in the Pat Robertson operation, Virginia Beach. But I was at her trial at the Prettyman Building, the federal courthouse in D.C., and I knew she was going to do this, but she tried to invoke the Classified Information Procedures Act so she could explain certain things to the judge, who was James Robertson, who I thought was going to be fair. He was a Bill Clinton appointee, but I should have realized, because Robertson was also a member of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, so he was part of the club. He did not entertain her motion to invoke the Classified Information Procedures Act. Now, why does somebody do that? That means they have signed a security clearance with a three-letter agency. And in her case, it was the Central Intelligence Agency. She was not freelancing. Pamela Martin and Associates was not a freelance escort service. They had other clients other than the usual ones. One thing I realized from looking at her phone records is most of the activity was McLean, Virginia, and in and around McLean, Virginia, Tyson's Corner, so forth and so on. A lot of hotels, and they were pretty much dead ends. A lot of cell phone numbers, they're kind of dead ends too, because they tend to change. But what I realized when I investigated this is that Jean Palfrey, one of her closest friends, was a guy named Kyle Dusty Fago. You may remember him because when Porter Goss took over at the CIA as director, he appointed Dusty Fago as the executive director, the same job that Buzzy Krongard had in 9/11. Fago gets this job. This is the third ranking job in the CIA. This is like the executive officer for the CIA, chief operating officer for the CIA. And his appointment was really criticized by a lot of rank and file because Fago's experience in the CIA was as a logistics guy. He had once been in charge of the logistics operation at the CIA station in Frankfurt, Germany. So they charged Jean Palfrey just as she had put a down payment on an apartment in East Berlin. She got it for $70,000. Okay, East Berlin's not like West Berlin, but prices are going up. But why, you know, I asked Jean, I said, Jean, are you German? I mean, are you from Germany? I mean, do you have relatives? She said, no. She wanted to get out of the country because she knew what was going to happen to her. So as she was getting ready to move to East Berlin, that's when the IRS and the postal inspectors pounced, and they got the indictment. So obviously her passport was pulled. Now, where did this apartment come from in East Berlin? Well, her friend Dusty Fago, when he was the head of logistics for the CIA in Frankfurt, it was a safe house during the Cold War, before the wall came down. So he basically did a favor for her. He says, yeah, you need a place? I got a place I can sell you pretty cheap in East Berlin. Fago, of course, was involved in these poker parties with Porter Goss and a guy named Randy Duke Cunningham, congressman from San Diego. They used to be all out in San Diego. That's how they got to know one another. And there was a couple other characters involved with some defense contractors. Many of them went to jail. But this issue, and what Jean Palfrey wanted to say, she told me, she said, look, some of my employees heard things before 9/11. Now, in retrospect, make a lot of sense. In other words, basically her escorts were very well-educated women. You know, you're not going to get the person who speaks broken English to work for her operation because her operation was to gain information for the CIA. It's not the first time the CIA has been involved in that business, and I'm sure some other escort has taken over her business now. I don't know which one it is. I mean, one employee was a professor at the University of Maryland Baltimore campus. She wound up hanging herself, too, as did Jean Palfrey later on. She had a professor at the Naval Academy. One of her employees was a 59-year-old psychiatrist from Montgomery County. You know, went to medical school. So these are not your run-of-the-mill escorts for D.C. Robertson rejected it. She was found guilty. And before her sentencing back in 08, they claimed she had left her condominium in Orlando, went to see her mother, who was very, very ill with a heart problem. And she was very protective of her mother, who lived in Tarpon Springs, Florida. And they claimed that Jean Palfrey went to the shed, one of these manufactured homes, went to the shed, the laundry room, and hanged herself from one of the rafters. And it was her mother who originally discovered her. Jean Palfrey would have not done that to her mother because her mother was down to like 30% heart capacity. She did not die of a heart attack, but Jean Palfrey definitely wouldn't have been worried about that. I talked to people in the area, and they said that they had seen a van in the area. They saw two men. But you're not going to question that in a place like that, retirement community. You know, people have to have things repaired. The police down there, like police everywhere with these incidents, they almost had their story ready to go. Boom. Found a suicide note. I looked at that. That didn't even look like something she would write. It looked contrived to me. This occurred on May 1st, 2008. Now, what kind of information might Jean Palfrey have had? This is the McLean Animal Hospital. It's on Chainbridge Road over here in McLean. In the transition, 2000, before Clinton left office, but before Bush and Cheney were inaugurated, Cheney took his dog, because he lived in McLean, he took his dog to this hospital. He had Secret Service protection at this point in time. He thought he left his cell phone at the hospital. Secret Service locked this place down. Nobody could come in and nobody could leave until they found Dick Cheney's cell phone. Now, why would it, you know, Dick Cheney, okay, he's only the vice president-elect. What would he have been so protective of on that cell phone? Herein, I think we have the information that Jean Palfrey knew about. I understand that one of the numbers on there was an employee later at the Agriculture Department, somebody that Cheney got a job for after he was inaugurated as vice president. So he obviously had some women's numbers in the cell phone who were not Lynn and his wife, or not Liz, or not the other one, the other daughter. These were friends. So there was that incident. This was the Bush-Cheney transition headquarters in 2000. This is at 1616 Anderson Road. And some of the numbers on Jean Palfrey's list were here. They went right back to this office. I got that from the Haynes Crisscross directory search. Okay, so Jean Palfrey obviously knew something. We heard about Muhammad Atta earlier. And, you know, a few days before 9/11, Atta was seen on the Sun Cruise casino boat in Madeira Beach, Florida, that was owned by Jack Abramoff. He was seen on there with that girlfriend of his, Amanda Keller. I've been down to Venice, Florida, and I've seen where Atta stayed in an apartment down there with her. I was in Key West. He also was seen in Key West. It is true, he met, when he came into Key West with his girlfriend, he met a guy who flew in who spoke German, and they linked up. And yeah, the booze, drugs, you name it, a lot of it. Because one of the people I talked to was a private investigator in Key West, and he was well aware of what was going on. Of course, none of these people were asked anything about from the 9/11 Commission. They had information, very relevant information.
At the D.C. 9/11 conference, Wayne Madsen also spoke about the death of author Philip Marshall, who wrote the book on 9/11 called The Big Bamboozle. It was reported that Philip Marshall was working on another book about 9/11 that would contain explosive information. He and his two children and the family dog were all found shot dead in his California home in early 2013. The corporate media reported it as a murder-suicide committed by Philip Marshall himself. Wayne Madsen went to California to investigate and came up with a very different conclusion.
Okay, the last one I covered was, this is Phil Marshall. This is his 17-year-old son, Alex, and his 14-year-old daughter, Michaela. Phil Marshall, I did not know. I did not know of his books. I did not know he had written two books on 9/11. The first was False Flag 9/11 and The Big Bamboozle, but his first, even more interestingly, was Lakefront Airport, a novel about his time flying for the CIA during the whole Iran-Contra. Actually, before Iran-Contra broke, he flew after Barry Seal, who was also assassinated in Baton Rouge, who was a government witness who could have put George H.W. Bush in jail. He was assassinated. Phil Marshall went to work as a pilot for Eastern Airlines, and then he went to work for United. He flew the Boeing 757 and the Boeing 767 airline, and contrary to Eastern and United policy, Phil Marshall did not have a college degree, but he was such a good pilot, they waived that requirement because of his expertise at flying these aircraft. As a matter of fact, when he went through the United Training School in Colorado, the guy said, I have never seen somebody more adept at flying aircraft than Phil Marshall, which will make his demise seem a lot more odd. Phil Marshall had this as his avatar on his Twitter account. For those of you who may not remember or have seen his photograph before, this is a group of people involved with the CIA. These were CIA agents, CIA assets, the group of 40. This was apparently taken in Mexico City. This gentleman here is Porter Goss, who would later become Congressman Porter Goss, chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, who was there on 9/11 in that capacity. This is Barry Seal, also a former CIA agent, but was killed because of information he had about Bush, Vice President Bush. And this is Felix Rodriguez, who is also somebody who is very well known in all this whole thing involving the Kennedy assassination, Iran-Contra, you name it. These people show up time and time again. But this was on Phil Marshall's avatar. This was his avatar. And when you look at what Marshall tweeted out right before his death on January 31st of this year, this was fairly recent, he sent these Twitter messages out. He said, what is the intelligence community hiding? Hint, there is no evidence that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was behind the training of the 9/11 hijackers. He also, on January 30th, he sent out, the Arab world knows the bin Laden raid in Abbottabad, Pakistan was a hoax. Bin Laden raid was a hoax. On January 28th, here we go again. These guys will never get a fair trial, talking about the trial of the accused 9/11 terrorists in Guantanamo. January 25th, two tweets on the battery problems affecting the Boeing 787, both titled Boeing's Nightmare. I doubt that would have done because we know all about those battery problems now with the Dreamliner. January 24th, 9/11 was an inside job. The hijackers were working with a team of Saudi government agents. This was not Al-Qaeda. January 23rd, Zero Dark 30, propaganda fueling the big bamboozle from false flag 9/11 by Phil Marshall. January 23rd, here's a new take. Zero Dark 30 is complete nonsense, a work of pure fiction. Bin Laden died in 2001. He's talking about, you know, the Zero Dark 30 movie about the raid. I was told by a very high official of the Mossad that bin Laden likely died of kidney failure in his native Hadramaut region of Yemen in 2001. But the big thing is that raid in Abbottabad was a staged event. So here we have another false flag operation. The Saudis tried to poison him and hence destroyed his kidneys. That's why he constantly had to have dialysis treatment. I did not know Phil Marshall, so I don't have a dog in this fight. I didn't know about his books. But when I read about who he was and what he had written, I said, come on now. He kills his two kids and his dog, even his dog, the little Shih Tzu named Suki, and kills himself with a Mach-10. And I fly out to, it's Calaveras County, for those of you who remember Mark Twain, the frog jumping thing in Angel's Camp, all that. He actually was out there at one point in time. But I go to the Marshall home. The yellow tape was actually removed, and the sheriff called in a cleaning crew to have it professionally cleaned before the investigation was over. I peeked through the front door. This is a pane glass window. The door would be over here to the left, and there's a couch there. Okay, when the neighbor, so it was Saturday, that would have been February the 1st. The Super Bowl was February the 2nd, Sunday. The kids missed their friends, the girl and Alex and Michaela. They missed them at school on Friday. You know, kids, if you don't get a Twitter message back, or, you know, they get worried, you know, what happened to them? So they go to the neighbor and they say, hey, something's wrong. They won't answer the phone. I don't get any message. So she said, okay. So she goes to the front door. Phil Marshall was writing about 9/11. He was a little concerned about his security, his safety. The door was open. She walked in, told the kids to remain outside. She looked down here at the end of this hallway, and two legs were sticking out, and it was Phil Marshall. He was lying on his back. They said he shot himself, but the gun was underneath his back. And the coroner maintains that he shot himself with his right hand, with the MAC-10, except the neighbor saw that the bullet hole was on the left side. So, you know, how do you do that easily? The two kids were on a U-shaped couch, so they're on the long ends of the couch. They were shot single time each. The dog was in the bedroom. Now, you know, why would anyone shoot a Shih Tzu? Well, obviously they're not like a Great Dane or a German Shepherd. They do this. And although this is a gated community in Forest Meadows, which is outside of Angel's Camp, it's amazing because the homes aren't next to each other because it's on the side of a mountain. They're almost on top of one another. And you can hear. His neighbor said she could hear Phil Marshall whistle in his home. But nobody heard the gunshots. There would have been four. One in the dog, one in Phil, and one each in the two kids. Nobody heard the gunshots. The sheriff said, oh, yeah, nobody would have heard. We did the ballistic tests and all this. No, nobody heard. Well, you would have heard. A silencer was obviously used. And if you're going to commit suicide, why do you want to use a silencer? This is the back of his home. This goes down to it's a gated community, but there, you can get Pacific Gas and Electric utility gate is at the bottom of this, and it's not secure. So you could easily come up here, go through the side of the house, and gain access that way. The side door was ajar. Neighbor said, look, that door is never open. It was open that day. And here's what I found interesting. This is the window I looked through, and what is here? The house had been pretty much cleaned out, except for that couch. Banker's boxes. Phil Marshall was working on yet another book. It would have been his fourth book. It was about 9/11. And nobody really knew what he was pursuing. Right before Easter, on Good Friday, they had his memorial service in Mandeville, Louisiana, where he was from, North Shore of Lake Pontchartrain. And Lakefront is on the other side of the lake, and it's connected by that bridge, that long bridge. So obviously, somebody had brought these boxes to get files, and they didn't need these extra ones, or his files were in these boxes, and they were removed. But I don't think you got to be Lieutenant Columbo to figure out somebody grabbed something because of these being present. They were later removed. But remember, I got there right after, basically a few days after the yellow tape disappeared. And that's his mailbox, Marshall. Anyway, what was Marshall looking at? I went to his memorial service. One relative told me, close relative, said, look, I know you're interested in what he was working on. He was looking at the Marana Airfield, Arizona. He made several trips down there, also known as the Pinal Air Park. Those of you familiar with the Tucson area, Davis-Monthan Air Force Base is the boneyard for the military aircraft. Next to it is the Pinal Air Park, the boneyard for all the civilian aircraft. It's like a museum. They put them there in the desert because they don't rust. They patch up the engines, secure those. And they have 757s and 767s, Boeing, anything you can imagine, going back to the old de Havilland airplanes, DC-3s. It's like a museum of aircraft. And it's obvious that he was snooping around there. I was told two old buddies of his from the CIA had contacted him, says, that's where you want to look. You want to look at this place in Marana. That's where you're going to find out what happened on 9/11. So where would you get aircraft if you wanted to drone a 767 or a 757? You'd get it from this place. And I think that's where Phil Marshall was going. I think because of his expertise as a pilot, he would have been a pretty good source. Not too many of the debunkers could question him with his record. And I think that's why they killed him and his family. His family, by the way, the kids normally wouldn't have been there that day. Their mother was in Turkey on a trip, business trip. They happened to be there. So whoever tracked his normal comings and goings probably figured, you know, the kids usually stayed with their mom closer to the high school. But because she was away, they happened to be there. So when they encountered the kids, they had to go to. Well, taking a commercial plane and putting drone technology in it so you can fly it remotely. And Lufthansa apparently had developed that technology back with their anti-hijacking efforts back when they had a couple planes hijacked by Palestinians in the early 70s. So that technology is well known. And here in this area, the company that Dove Zakheim was involved with, I believe it was SRA, had a lot of that technology to remotely pilot commercial planes of any size.
And again, the website for the DC conference is dc911conference.org. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.